to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.
This week on This American Life, Brendan's first girlfriend dumped him because he was too obsessed with sports. So when he met Cecilia, he tried a new tactic. They were out, and a friend asked him about the Celtics. And he was like, I'm not that into sports anymore.
Even when the words came out of my mouth, I was sort of thinking, you just said that.
And then he had to live with that lie. Lies that make no sense. This week.
Tonight at 6 on Radio Catskill.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear the exotic sounds of Rex Kona and the Mandarins, plus new music by the Tiki Delights and Vibezotica, and a mariachi band goes nuts. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Morgan Outdoors, celebrating 20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. On Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail, morgan-outdoors.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is artist, teacher, and former Disney performer, Heather Lockwood of Calico, New York. Heather grew up in Susquehanna, Pennsylvania, and started dance lessons at 3. In high school, she studied dance in Conklin, New York, and then went on to Point Park University in Pittsburgh, where her dance study expanded from jazz and Broadway style to ballet. She left school after 2 years and went to try her luck in New York City, where in one day, she auditioned for the Rockettes, Disney, and Royal Caribbean Cruise Line and was offered contracts with all 3. She chose Disney, and I'll let her tell the rest. Heather, welcome to Catskill Character, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi, Donna. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
Well, the first question out of the box is, why did you choose Disney?
As a performing artist, growing up, they always tell you to take the opportunity that is the longest contract, because usually you have to sign a contract year after year. So I took Tokyo Disney because it was a 10-month contract and it was time to leave the nest and go explore the world.
I just want to ask you a couple of questions about the Rockettes, because, you know, every young dancer, I'm sure, dreams of being a Rockette. What does it mean if you get into the Rockettes? You know, what's the system like in that organization?
First of all, it's very specific. There's certain height requirements to be considered as a Rockette. But as far as the organization goes, it's a great thing that once you're a Rockette, you can be a Rockette for life. Yes, you have to audition every year for the Christmas show, but you're always part of the organization. And it's a multifaceted organization to where you can teach workshops, you can do the parade. So you don't just do the Christmas spectacular. So kind of once you're in, you're in.
Didn't you tell me you have a friend who's been in it for years?
Yes, she was a Rockette for the Radio Christmas Spectacular for 5 years or 6 years. And then from there, she is now part dance captain and teaches all the new Rockettes. She teaches different precision workshops and stuff for the Rockettes and has just been a part of the organization for many, many years now, even though she's no longer dancing.
I see. I remember you telling me about the lineup, you know, when they're doing those high kicks. And what really surprised me was you said the shortest girls were in the middle and then it went out to the tallest girls. Is that right?
That is correct. And it's like it's how you perceive it. You know, they have to make sure, because the girls on the end have to take the biggest steps. So usually the taller girls are towards the end.
Right. Well, everything is perspective, right, Heather?
Absolutely.
You did tell me that you were very naive and you didn't really understand how things worked back then. Before you went to New York City, as I said, you were in Pittsburgh studying dance. Were you a dance major at Point Park?
I was a dance major and no one offered different things to me. No one knew how it worked. I was the only one in my family that ever did dance and we didn't do a lot of research. I just danced my whole life. So I just decided to go to college, and I didn't know that there was just so many different areas of dance. You know, I just thought if you're a dancer, you're a dancer, you know, but there's kinesiology and there's choreography. And there's just, I was just so naive that I didn't know that I had other options. You know, there was no research back then.
Right. Yeah. I remember when I was getting ready for college compared to what I did with my own son when he was getting ready. It's just, it's like light years, the difference. I'm not going to say my parents were indifferent, but neither one of them had gone to college. So they didn't really get it. So
right.
You're kind of on your own. So I understand what you mean.
Yes.
But when you were there, it seems that your teachers, the Petrovs, they kind of went above and beyond, and they were very, very encouraging. It must have felt great to have that kind of support when you were at school.
I did. The Petrovs were a husband and wife ballet potager couple that came from Yugoslavia, and they were like world-renowned dancers, and they were just like amazing. You know, they kind of saw something in me, and which I was glad because they really, really pushed me. I have a funny story about that. One time, I was, again, naive, not sure, you know, out on my own for the first time. I'd never really left Susquehanna before, and here I am in this college, and I was just like exhausted. You know, I danced all day, took academic classes on top of that. And I remember one day I was just exhausted and I was sleeping in my bed. I didn't get up for my class. And literally Mrs. Petrov at, I don't know, 9 a.m. is at my dorm room door, knocking on my door. And I open the door and she's like, "Good morning. I will see you in 5 minutes."
Wow.
And I never thrown my dance clothes on so fast and pulled my hair back and went. I was like, "Hi, I'm here." Okay. But it was just amazing to me that they just encouraged me. And to the point where I went in as a Broadway style jazz dancer. And within my second semester, I had transferred to be a ballet major because my studio growing up in Conklin was just more of a, you know, we had to take ballet. I wasn't introduced to terminology and stuff like that. And once I got to school, I was just amazed. It was just a whole new world to me. So I just loved it so much that someone could make ballet fun and expressive. And it was just, you know, I thought it was just all technical and rigid.
They sound like they were really something else. I was wondering, how long did it take you to get work once you left school and went to New York to audition?
I think we were like on spring break from college and we came back home to Susquehanna and we just found out there was all these auditions. So we went to the city for one day and we auditioned for three different shows, Tokyo Disneyland, Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines, and oh my goodness.
The regular Disney, right?
Yeah, regular Disney. Yep. And it was just so great. But that was a lot of auditioning in one day. And then so literally we were only there for 2 days in New York City and we came home and within two more days, we found out whether we got it or not. And like you said, in the intro, you know, I got all three positions, which was amazing to me. And I just had to decide. I think my parents' faces were crazy when I was like, "Hi, I'm 19. I'm just going to leave. And I think I'm going to take the Tokyo one."
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So with Tokyo Disney, is that the same company that owns Disney Orlando?
It's the Disney name, but Tokyo Disney is owned by Oriental Land Company. They have a little bit different, there's no unions. So it was a kind of different atmosphere. When you're a performer, you know, you're part of a union, which is the Actors Equity Association. And in Tokyo, they just have a very different work ethic. You know, you don't get a lot of breaks. You're required to do 7 shows a day, you know, 5 days a week. And, you know, with the unions in the United States, they protect you from overworking, basically, you know.
Mm-hmm. But you said there were no unions in Japan. So what happens if you got sick?
So if you get sick, you go to work. And they expect you to do your job. I mean, it's a cultural thing. You know, you come in, you do your job. That's what you're hired for. There was an occasion where we had people who were like very sick, like couldn't even get out of bed to perform. And then if that's the case, then what they would do is there was hired singers and hired dancers. So let's say if a singer was sick, a dancer would cover the singer's role and it would just be like a tracked recording of their voice, and the dancer would portray that character instead.
Mm-hmm. And what was their attitude towards somebody who took a day off because they were sick?
Oh, so what would happen is if you were sick and you had to take a day off, when you came in the next day, which, like, you know, you had to be there, and you come in the next day and you literally would have to come in front of the whole cast, which was like 50 people, and you'd have to apologize for, you know,
oh my God,
putting them down. You just stay, they'd bring everybody together in the green room, and everyone would be sitting around staring at you, and they would have you go in and apologize for not doing your job.
Gee, that is very Japanese, I guess.
Yes.
What was your job when you were in Tokyo Disney? I mean, there's all different kinds of things that you do there.
Yes. So I was hired for a show that was called Feel the Magic, and it was a 10-month contract, and I was hired as a dancer. But when they bring Americans over, what happens is they hire you as dancers, but you also have to portray face characters. So I was hired as a dancer to play the dancer roles, but in our show, we had a lot of face characters like Cinderella and Belle and the Little Mermaid and all that stuff. So in my show, I portrayed Cinderella and Belle on certain days, and then other days I would be a dancer, which was really, really fun. And I loved it so much. I loved watching the little kids and seeing their faces as you came out on stage. We actually had fans, and they would meet you at the train station when the show was over.
Wow.
And yeah, you'd come out from the backstage, and you'd get on the train, and they'd be like, oh, hi. And they like give you pictures and pictures. I had more pictures of myself as Cinderella and Belle than I know what to do with. Just stacks of pictures, and you had different fans and little girls, and, you know, they're just in awe. Actually, in Tokyo, which is really odd, but when you're in Tokyo and you're a hired American to do a contract, you cannot go out into the park on a day that you work. In Florida, you can go walk around the park and stuff like that, but in Tokyo, you cannot, because you stand out like a sore thumb, and they know that you're an American performer.
Mm. They want to keep that mystery.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. So you did eventually, when you got back from Japan, you did go work in Orlando, and you were you were in a show where you had to do the can-can, right? What was that like?
Yes. So the show was called the Diamond Horseshoe Review, and it was a Western can-can show in Frontierland in the Magic Kingdom. And it was so fun. You got to be loud and crazy and scream a lot. And, you know, it was very, very hard on your body. There was a lot of can-canners with the leg spins and the kicking. And we used to do this thing where you'd run and you'd jump and land in a split on the ground.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, so, you know, it was very hard on the body. I'm very fortunate, you know, that I did it for 5 years, which was amazing, but it was great. We got to sing, we got to dance, we got to play like fun, interesting character roles, you know, where you could have a different personality every day, however you were feeling, you know, so it was really, really fun.
So you had a backstory.
Oh, yes.
You gave your characters a backstory.
Yes. And we literally just went with it. You know, you just go with it, and, you know, you have to flirt with the guys and make fun of your boss, who was the leading lady, you know, and stuff. So it was really fun, and it was really fun to do.
Well, you've done so many things outside of the dance world, all pretty much involved in art. And in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about that and the life you've been building in the last year and a half here in Calicoon. But first, we're going to take a short break. You've been listening to Catskill Character with me, your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today, teacher, dancer, artist from Calicoon, New York, Heather Lockwood. We'll be right back.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is Jeffrey Toobin, legal commentator at CNN and author of articles and books on some of the most famous legal cases in recent history. His new book examines the history of presidential pardons and their impact today. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station. City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Hi, this is Callison Stratton, host of Liberation Station, airing Saturday nights at 7 o'clock only on Radio Catskill. This week, we are closing out Black History Month with a showcase of new indie folk and pop artists who are all members of the Black community and, as always, are all female or femme-presenting performers. Tune in this Saturday night at 7 o'clock for Liberation Station right after This American Life, only on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and if you've just joined us, I've been speaking with Heather Lockwood, who worked at Tokyo Disney as a face, which she explained is what they call characters at Disney, and she was also a dancer there. And then she worked at Disney Orlando for 5 years in a show where she was a can-can dancer. In the second half of the show, Heather's going to talk about why and what she's been doing since she left Disney. Here we go. As I understand it, Heather, you met your husband, Jake, at Disney, and after 9/11, you got married. And with little or no work available during that time, you had children and you were a stay-at-home mom for 6 years. I'm sure the listener would love to know how you then reimagined your career and rebuilt it and have been pretty much working for yourself for the past 15 years.
Sure, yes. So after 9/11 happened, they closed our show at Disney. And at that point, like I said, I just got married and we decided that it was time to start a family. And so I just stayed at home with the kids for the first 5 years. And then I was, you know, as a dancer, I made a realization that when it came to the dancing, it wasn't necessarily about the movement. It was the visual and the lines and the motion and stuff that you could see. And I've always loved to make stuff, and I'm a doer and a maker. And I decided that I was going to apply for this job at this preschool just as a little part-time, or maybe offer an after-school craft class or something like that. And that's where it kind of started. I started Lockwood Creation Studios probably 15 years ago. And I did a little after-school art class for the kids at the preschool, which was a huge success. And then it just grew and grew from there. I started running it from my house. I had a studio in all of my houses, and kids would come there. And I just advertise. And I just, you know, the transition has been wonderful. I've been able to build it and have a certain teaching technique that is very rare nowadays, unfortunately, in the school systems. And I still, to this day, use those methods.
What is the teaching technique that's rare?
Well, unfortunately, in the school systems nowadays, what we have is, you know, they have to meet certain criteria in the classroom. So the kids have to meet certain points of academic achievement in the art room, and they can only teach certain things. And of course, budgets are limited. And so they only have certain amount of supplies. And so they have to do very just basic things. You know, they give the kids watercolors or whatever, and they just say, okay, we're making fish. And it gets very rigid into where it's like, your fish, first you're going to use yellow and then you're going to use green. And it's just so, it's not exploratory, which art is supposed to be. And it's just so rigid. And I've actually had children tell me that they really hate art class, and it makes me so sad. And I'm just like, it's supposed to be free expression. And if you want your fish to be purple, make the fish purple. As long as in my studio, my method has always been, as long as you're applying the lesson, you can make it however you want to make it. And that's the best thing about art. I can't tell you exactly how to make it.
So you're definitely you don't have to color inside the lines teacher.
Oh, absolutely not. And I love messes, so.
Okay. Well, what prompted you to move to Calicoon?
My daughter graduated 2 years ago from high school. I have a son and a daughter. My son is in college in Florida, but my daughter graduated, and her number one choice was the Fashion Institute of Technology in New York City. And once she decided that that's where she was going, we decided to move to Calicoon because we'd be closer to the city, we'd be closer to her, and my family is only 45 minutes away, and I have been away from my family for 27 years. Mm. So I decided it was time to come home and watch my nieces and nephews grow up and be able to see my brothers and my mom and dad more often. And it's just been fabulous.
Oh, that's great. And I know I want to also mention that your husband, Jake, is also in the biz. He directs and writes. Tell us just a little bit about what he does.
Yes. When we met, he was an actor at Disney, an improv actor, and he had worked for Disney for 25 years. And once he left Disney, he decided to do more writing. And so now currently he is a writer and a director, and he directs and writes theater productions and shows and works for different cruise lines as a contractor. And he just actually premiered his first play. It's very exciting.
Oh, that's great. Well, okay, so you moved up here to Calicoon, and I hear that both of you have careers that are portable. Once again, when you got up here, you opened up Lockwood Creation Studios. What kind of experiences do you offer?
So we have regularly weekly classes where we have after-school classes where elementary school kids come and take a weekly art class for an hour. But we also offer toddler sessions where the tiny little kids, 2 to 5 years old, come and we read a story, we make art, and then we do sensory bins with them. All the bins are themed towards the story of the day. I offer adult classes, paint and sip classes, different types of workshops. We have an exciting mosaic house number workshop coming
up. Yes, I saw that. I'm very interested in that, Heather.
Yes, it's really fun. And I love it because, number one, I have something that I don't think I ever told you this. I have never repeated a lesson in 15 years.
How is that possible?
It's the way my mind works, I think. So it might be the same concept, but we've never done it the same way in 15 years.
You know, that must be why your excitement is palpable. I can see, I can feel it, that you still just love what you're doing.
I do.
Let's just talk for 1 second about that mosaic class. Do you have the mosaics that you have there in the studio and that's what your students use? Or do they bring, like, say, like, oh, I have these old pieces of china that I'd love to incorporate?
Yes.
How does it work?
Every class you sign up for at the studio, all the supplies are provided. You just bring yourself. I always encourage people to bring something if they want something to drink or snack. It's a very relaxed atmosphere. And I always encourage people to know that my studio is not a fancy studio. Mine is a working artist studio. So I have my art projects all over the place. And I tell people, come in your sweatpants. I don't care. It's not fancy. I always have all the supplies. But I do encourage people, if there's something that wants to make theirs more personal, bring your favorite coffee cup that might have broken. We can incorporate it into your piece, you know, because those are things that make you who you are.
Didn't you tell me you've also taught at Bethel Woods?
Yes, I am a Bethel Woods teaching artist, and I teach for their play program 1 week during the summer, which is the younger kids from 7 to 9. And then I teach the fine arts program, which is the older kids, 11 to 15. That was an amazing experience. We have a lot of local teaching artists that are just incredible to work together, and we just collaborate on things. And I've had a great experience working for Bethel Woods. They've been an amazing organization. I teach their summer camps. I teach for the Harvest Festival projects for them. And then we've done a couple little specialty things where they've had different activities during concerts and stuff. So it's just been an amazing organization to work for.
You know, I was just wondering, there are so many artists up here. Do any of you get together, you know, just to talk about what you're doing and just to be encouraging to each other? Or are you pretty much on your own?
It's funny you say that. This past year, I worked at the Fine Arts Camp in Bethel Woods. There was 5 teaching artists. We called ourselves the Dream Team. And we just worked so well together. And we actually became really good friends. We get together. We go to Catherine Chester. She has a studio in Berryville. And she offers a collage class, and, you know, we go there. Actually, I'm having dinner with one of them. They're coming to my house for dinner, you know. So, like, we've made a really good friendships, and we love to get together and talk about what we've been doing. And so, yes, it's been an amazing community and very supportive.
Loneliness is a real problem. In fact, the Surgeon General, the last Surgeon General, had that as his platform. He wanted to have a mental health platform and talk about loneliness specifically. Mm-hmm. And it can get very lonely up here. So that's great that you have that community of like-minded people.
And that's kind of what I strive for in my studio, is to realize that when we have adult classes, and I've had somebody tell me that it's so hard to make friends as an adult, you know, and I started this club that's called the Crappy Craft Club, and it's the first Friday of every month, and we just make ridiculous art projects, and it's really about just being social, especially during the winter months, and it was fabulous. It was supposed to be a two-hour class, and we sat around for 4 hours just talking about our lives. And I think, you know, a lot of people are just lonely and just want someone to talk to, especially as somebody that works from their house, you know.
Yeah.
It's you don't have to leave if you don't want to. You have to force yourself to be social.
I swear to God, I think I've been in my house for 2 weeks.
I know. It's terrible.
I went out one day for some radio stuff. But that's it. I've been in, it's crazy. Anyway, enough about me. You have a show coming up at the Nest in Lake Huntington, because let's not forget, you are an artist. Tell us about that.
So the show that's coming up is called Imaginative Interlude, and it is running until May at the Arts Nest at the Delaware Valley Opera House in Lake Huntington. Actually, we're having... the show is fabulous. It's a collaborative event, and I'm paired with an artist, Abby Alzamora, and she's also Bethel Woods teaching artist. And they reached out to us to see if we would put a show together collaboratively, and it's been so much fun. And it is a show that shows you how to play when making art, how it's supposed to be fun. And so it is all very experimental, gluing things, painting over things, using recycled things to make art. I have a piece that's a giant cuckoo clock that's in there. It's just really, really fun, and it's very playful. And we just thought it would be a great collaboration, because Abby and I have very similar working styles. And we just thought it would be a great collaboration in these gray times of winter. And it is the most colorful, interactive art show. There's kaleidoscopes for you to look through. There's projects for you can sit down and make art and then stick them on the windows. It's just a really, really little fun, exciting.
Yeah, we need that right now, too.
Yeah.
What's your website, Heather?
My website is www.lockwoodcreationstudio.com.
Okay, rockwoodcreationstudio.com. You know, I am so pleased that you came on with me today. It's really been fun. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Donna. I've had a great time.
Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30, except the last Saturday of the month, when Greg Triggs brings us Travels with Triggs in the same 10:30 time slot. Join us then to hear more fascinating stories from fabulous characters of the Catskills and beyond. This is Radio Catskill. I'm Donna Fellenberg, host and producer of Catskill Character, and I thank you so much for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
This is Ari Shapiro with NPR. If you've been thinking about helping this station with a contribution, but now is not the right time for a financial gift, you can donate a vehicle you don't need. Pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Think about it, and thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at WJFFradio.org.
Spring is approaching, we hope, so to get us all in the mood on the next Waggle of the Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, show on Radio Catskill. We hear songs about songbirds as they tune up for the mating season, and some English bird song as well. Please tune in for the Songs of the Birds on Sunday afternoon at 3.
WJFF Jeffersonville, this is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.